A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Sports videos flash in the spaces between black geometric shapes. The view zooms out to reveal a blue bar broken up by the black shapes. White text fills the black, untold. Clouds hang over a brick condominium. The scene fades to black. A Netflix sports series.
Oh my God.
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Oh my God.
Sorry, what's going on?
I mean, I hate that. I can't be the one to make this call. It's so messed up. Somebody's been shot.
Is it male or female?
There's two people.
And they're both appear to be deceased?
I think so, sir.
Who are you? What's going on?
My name is Robert Gay.
Robert, a middle-aged black man, sits for an interview.
As soon as I pull up, I walked in. Of course, I get my pistol, because I don't know what's really going on. I take one foot inside, and I see somebody with his head cocked down. And I see two blood stains. I see blood on his temple. I see blood on his Air Force Ones. And I'm like, oh, my God. I was in shock to see that. I mean, I could see the bullet holes. I mean, I didn't even take time to just scope the scene. It was just what I saw at a glance.
I got a phone call from my captain. He said, hey, we got a murder investigation. And when I first come into the scene, there was a purse on the sofa. His body was sort of like to the side.
A black man in a suit leans in his chair.
And I could see a female on the floor. And if you looked at her a little closer, you noticed there was a gun on the floor.
Downtown Nashville, there are a number of police investigating a shooting. A man had been shot in the head.
Seen a lot of traffic going in and out of the complex. A lot of forensic officials going in and out.
We got out here around 2 o'clock, and it was a very active scene. We're hearing all sorts of conflicting reports, even from police sources. We're hearing different things, different pieces of information that it's very difficult to get confirmed at this time.
We were one of the first crews at the scene. It seemed unusual for the scene to be growing as it was. And soon we saw top police spokespeople, officials showing up, bigger names in the department. My photographer, he starts telling me, I'm getting some messages that this might be Steve McNair.
I mean, I was shocked. What? Steve McNair?
Robert Gatti looks down and works his mouth.
I'm sorry, y'all.
Grabbed my cell phone. I said, is what true? What are you talking about? I've been out of service. Steve was murdered.
I want to make sure you're aware of a breaking news story out of Tennessee. Former NFL quarterback Steve McNair has been found dead.
It reached almost like a frenzy outside because everybody is now getting this information that this is Steve McNair.
We're following breaking news tonight.
Following a developing story.
This was a guy who came from a small town in Mississippi and basically lived the American dream.
They called him Air McNair. Great arm.
Former NFL MVP.
That is the condominium where the bodies were found.
The place was nondescript. What would Steve McNair be doing here?
He had three children. He was still married to his wife. They'd been married for 12 years.
Steve McNair was a rare breed, a trendsetter over today's current signal caller.
I don't have any answers for you now as to what's happened, who's responsible, what the circumstances are. No one is in custody right now. That's all I have to say for right now. Thank you.
In archival footage of a football game, Steve McNair throws a football. The scene cuts to black. A title appears, Untold. The murder of Air McNair. Outside during the day, a white middle-aged man rubs his face. Jeff Fisher, NFL coach.
So you heard of the 85 Bears?
In archival footage, a Bears player tackles a Lions player.
I was a punt returner. Buddy Ryan, the defensive coordinator. I'm hurt. I know the defense. Buddy went to bat for me. So I traveled with the team. Help to make adjustments on the sideline. We are in New Orleans. 85 Super Bowl is what it is. And Buddy says, I think I'm gonna take the Philadelphia Eagle job as head coach, and I want you to come put the defense in for me. That's how I got into coaching. My journey in Philly lasted 5 years. And then I went to work for the 49er organization to be a DB coach. I left the top place and I went to Houston, and it was a mess, let me just say that.
In archival footage, the Texans head coach punches Jeff.
We had fights in the locker room. We had a lot of problems. And then
they may be 1-9, but this is the beginning tonight of a brand new regime.
Jeff Fisher is the new head coach. He is 36 years old. What we do know.
And now I'm the head coach, and so you're gonna make changes. I was most excited about having the number 3 pick. And one thing for certain was we needed a franchise quarterback.
Steve Air McNair's achievements are worthy of Heisman Trophy consideration. But he plays in relative obscurity at Alcorn State.
Robert Gatti.
Here's my age showing good. I'm going to make sure I get my alma mater love.
Alcorn State, 1992.
Going to a HBCU, to come out of the locker room and to see 50,000 black people in the stands, everybody just having a good time. It's something beautiful to behold as a black man. Steve loved that atmosphere, and he was must watch.
McNair, back to pass. And he takes off. He's dangerous. Look at him at the 30. He's at the 35, 40. McNair at midfield, killing his feet. I thought he was going out of bounds, Clay.
Steve McNair jumps over a defender and lands over the goal line.
I personally was I was blocking for him, so I didn't see it during the game, during real time.
John protect McNair at all costs.
It was going to be 2 or 3 plays a game that he just did something remarkable.
In archival footage, Steve McNair dodges a defender and throws the football. Another player dives and catches the ball. Cheerleaders hop and grin.
I mean, I would see the man throw it 70 yards off his back foot.
McNair drops back, looking.
Footage of a plane taking off plays.
Throw across the middle.
Jeff Fisher.
It was hard to get Alcorn footage. We had to go there to watch in person. Steve would take the shotgun snap and take a look around and then go run. We were objective. We did our research. People liked him. He smiled, he was quiet. He didn't really like the cameras and interviews and things like that. But there was no question in our mind. He had the capability to excel at this level.
1995 draft.
What's up, fellas? Give me your name.
What's up,
man?
KB, Kyle Brady, Casey, Kevin Carter,
Steve McNair.
So people had a pretty good idea who were taking.
How do you think you're gonna feel when you step out on the stage?
Well, I feel better than I am right now.
With the third choice in the first round, the Houston Oilers select quarterback from Alcorn State, Steve McNair.
Steve, a young black man with medium brown skin, grins as he puts on an Oilers hat. Jeff.
We're just getting started. It was all about timing. With exception of the ending, it couldn't have worked out any better.
The scene fades to black. Crime scene photos flash. A bullet hole mars a beige wall. A sliding metal gate stands closed outside a brick condominium. July 4th, 2009.
Former NFL quarterback Steve McNair is dead. McNair's body was found in Nashville, Tennessee, where police are investigating a crime scene.
Charles Robinson.
It's a homicide investigation.
Nashville PD detective.
We had two bodies. There were people of interest that we wanted to talk to for Steve's murder.
Did you take away a man in a police car earlier?
There are persons who were around the complex today, visitors who have been taken to headquarters for questioning.
Amy Viteri, investigative reporter.
The friend of McNair's discovered those bodies this afternoon. He then called another friend of McNair's, who then called police, and that's how this investigation started.
Wayne Neely is the person who walked in on the 4th of July and discovered the scene.
In archival security footage, a middle-aged white man sits in an interview room. Person of interest one.
Wayne actually left the scene before we got there. He saw Steve's SUV there. decide to stop and go in and try to talk to Steve.
Two white men enter the interview room.
I asked the detective that was at the scene, could they go and interview Wayne about exactly what happened? Because at this time, we don't know what we got. All we know, we got two dead people, and they've both been shot.
You need a drink of water,
anything?
Yeah.
I guess maybe we should just start with maybe a history of the apartment itself.
Steve. Steve wanted a place to we'll call it chilling, okay? I put him on it. He was there. Been there for a while.
So, did you have a key to the apartment?
Absolutely.
When you opened the door and tell me what you saw.
Suddenly, on the couch, I was asleep, I swear.
You saw two people on the couch and you...
No. One was on the couch, one was on the floor.
Who did you think was Steve when you went in the door?
I didn't think it was Steve.
Wouldn't you expect that to be him since it's his place?
No, I mean, I just...
Where did you go?
Straight to the refrigerator. Had a beer.
Okay.
Coming back out, I saw a shell casing. And that's why I went, fuck.
And is there a gun in your car?
There is a gun in my car. And I don't have a permit. It's 32, stolen advisor. I know a lot of police officers. And I don't know how it works, but...
Wayne pulls out a stack of cash.
You don't have to pay us.
You're worth at least 20.
Person of interest too, Robert Gatti.
We interviewed Gatti.
In archival footage, Robert Gatti sits in the interview room.
Played football at Alcorn with Steve and was a business partner with Steve.
The two white men enter the room.
Would you mind hopping over in that chair over there for me?
Robert gets up and moves to a chair on the far side of a table.
Now tell me what your actual name is.
Amy Viteri.
Wayne Neely calls Robert Gatti instead of calling 911.
What happened today? Start from what you know. Tell me what happened.
I was actually on the phone when Wayne called me. And he's like, Big Daddy, have you talked to Steve? I said, well, as he said, we got a problem. Something don't happen at the apartment. He had no indication that that was Steve on that sofa. I just wanted to make sure, I didn't care who it was, because I don't know nothing about that look. I don't fool that little cat house. But I just wanted to make sure my best friend was all right.
People used to try to label me as Steve's bodyguard, but it wasn't necessarily that. I was getting Steve involved into the business world. Whatever he needed, I handled it for him. You didn't see him out and about that I wasn't either with him or far behind.
Never told you anything about
no, I mean, and
that's threats or
no. And see, I was so upset because you know we was going through one of our ups and downs. Well, you know, because we had told each other off, and I know if that hadn't happened, he probably would have called me if anything had went was going down.
Robert hangs his head in his hand. Detective Robinson.
We learned they had a falling out towards the end of Steve's life.
We started this business venture together. All right.
The restaurant.
Yeah, the restaurant. I wanted to do something else, and he got upset about it.
It was a check with two signatures on it for $13,000 that me and Steve got into an argument over.
A sign reads Steve McNair's Gridiron.
Is there a gun in your car?
Yeah, that's why I gave the officer my keys. I told him my handgun was in the back of the truck.
Amy Viteri.
Gatti comes to the scene and understands that this is his friend, this is Steve McNair, and does call 911. A lot of people had questions about the time that sort of elapsed, the amount of time that passed, it was almost an hour, before 911 was called after this terrible discovery was made.
Detective Robinson.
Any investigation that you get involved in is like putting a puzzle back together.
We found out the woman who was dead inside that condo, she had this Cadillac Escalade.
A 2007 black Cadillac Escalade towed from the murder scene is registered to both Steve McNair and an unidentified woman.
You do naturally sort of jump to that question. What was the nature of their relationship?
A timeline appears. Text under the last notch reads 2009. The timeline scrolls backwards to 1995. Jeff.
So 95 season had some tough losses, battled through some little injury things.
Brett Hopkins, Oilers lineman.
I was drafted to a veteran team, and that veteran team still existed by the time Steve got there. I mean, there were guys 10, 12 years older than me.
I'm not in any hurry to bring Steve along. Going to take our time. Got a veteran quarterback on the roster.
There were people that thought that, you know, the job was in good hands and didn't need a change. We had a good enough quarterback.
A headline reads, Air McNair still floating without spot.
I could sense a little animosity there, though.
But you can feel the tension.
As a matter of fact, Steve came down the hall finally and said, is that happening? It wasn't working. So I had to make a decision. Change veteran quarterback and put faith in your rookie or hang in there. So basically said, here, you got it. You got the keys, buddy.
In archival footage, Steve McNair scrambles, running with the ball. His jersey bears the number 9.
We have a rookie quarterback who's gonna get some snaps. It's all excited, and there are stadium issues.
Houston owner Bud Adams again today made it clear that the Astrodome is no longer a suitable playing site for his team under any conditions.
They can't expect me to sit here and go broke.
Attendance drops. And then, bang, now they announce the move. The Houston Oilers are relocating the franchise to the state of Tennessee. Fuck.
In an archival crime scene photo, a notice printed on bright orange paper reads, biohazard, danger.
The other victim was just identified.
A 20-year-old woman by the name of Sahel Kazemi.
Police describe Kazemi as a friend of McNair's. They tell us she worked at Dave & Buster's. Jenny is what she went by.
Amy Viteri.
What we understood as we started getting information about this relationship was that, you know, she was essentially his girlfriend.
On the second day of the investigation, we went out to Jenny's job and we saw the interview and her coworker.
Voice of Detective Robinson.
Today's date is July the 5th of 2009, time by my watch is 17:36 hours. We're here at Dave & Buster's.
Jenny's co-worker, Sonia New.
Has she ever talked to you in the past about her and Steve's relationship?
Yeah, I know that she cared a lot about him. She was really, really excited about their relationship. He treated her really nicely. She said that he wanted to take care of her.
Jenny's co-worker, Roosevelt Glass.
He pursued her here. They were talking about moving in together, huh, Steve?
Amy Viteri.
She was in a good place in her life. This is a woman who's, you know, barely not a girl, right? I mean, 19, 20 years old. She's going out and having fun. I mean, she was underage to be going to some of these bars. But, you know, this was a girl who was just out looking for a good time. And then at some point, she met Steve McNair.
Jenny's friend, Emily Andrews.
They had conversations about adopting kids one day together and really building a life together. And okay. I think they went and looked at a couple houses.
Amy Viteri.
We started finding photos of the two of them on beach vacations together, you know, doing these sort of intimate activities. And he was going out with her publicly. It wasn't a secret.
Detective Robinson.
Jenny wasn't coming to work that much anymore because she was dating Steve and Steve was kind of taking care of her.
Emily.
They started to really, what seemed like, fall for each other. And it was genuine. It wasn't like she was just into it because of who he was.
Relative of Jenny, Sapida Selmani.
She was happy with him. She said that he was about getting divorced very soon, in about 2 weeks, I guess.
Steve McNair was married. Everybody knew who his wife was. Metro Police tell us that they have notified Steve McNair's wife, Michelle McNair, and that she was obviously devastated by the news. They tell us that they are not considering her a suspect.
Did you know any other relationship Jenny may have been involved in?
Prior to Steve, she had a boyfriend. I don't know anything about him. I don't know his name or anything like that.
Detective Robinson.
We were able to learn that she had a boyfriend, that ex-boyfriend, broken up with when she started dating Steve. I mean, I don't know if he's angry over, you know, the breakup of this young lady then dumped you because she started dating Steve McNair. So he was also a person of interest.
In archival footage, a young white man sits in the interview room across from Detective Robinson. The timeline moves to 1999 in front of Adelphia Coliseum. Jeff.
We got here, the first trip I made to Nashville.
Come on down and see us in Nashville, Tennessee.
On the Sunday sports was NASCAR for 20 minutes.
Back it down.
And then there was 5 minutes of football.
Brad Hopkins.
It was just a sleepy little town for an NFL team. It was different.
In archival footage of a uniform reveal, players walk on stage wearing blue and white uniforms.
It may be spring, but the Titans have brought out their new fall wardrobe.
Eddie George, loving life, ready to travel, looking ghetto fabulous.
You know, I just didn't want to go out looking like a clown.
Brad Hopkins.
That was the first year we were the Tennessee Titans. And we were trying to find an identity. We're trying to find out who we were.
Jeff.
Yeah, it was not easy.
Programs, Titans' first game ever. Programs.
We were new to the city. There were probably more people that came to see who we were playing than came to see us.
It was a work in progress. It was everybody rolled their sleeves up and was involved. We opened the 99 season, first time in the stadium.
First home game. In archival footage, jets fly over the stadium.
We're down by 9. 3 or 4 minutes left to go in the game.
McNair takes a straight drop. He fires George 15. George 10. George 5. George in zone!
Let's go. We gotta keep fighting. Let's keep fighting. It's a team that never gives up right here. It's a team that never gives up.
If you believe, we'll always believe.
Right.
We won the game.
This was a big one, okay? This was your first victory here, okay? Right now, you're undefeated at home. We got to keep that stuff going.
Home win streak, 1-0.
Jeff Fisher wanted the kind of team that was controlling the football on both sides of the line of scrimmage.
A Titans player grabs a Raiders player by the uniform and throws him to the ground.
And that's a good thing that Steve wasn't this character that needed to have a spotlight on him, because it probably would have made it impossible to have that style of offense. We started putting together a string of games.
2-0.
Building up confidence.
In archival footage, Steve McNair runs into the end zone. 3-0. 4-0.
We weren't trying to be the greatest show on turf. We were trying to beat you into submission. And that's the way we approached everything that we did.
5-0. Steve McNair sends a football soaring across the stadium. Another player catches it in the end zone. 6-0.
But as we started winning ball games, guess where they started showing up? It was an incredible, incredible environment.
In archival footage, fans shake pom-poms. Jeff.
The 99 season was different.
7-0. Brad.
That's what made this city fall in love with us.
I knew they were going to win, and I've been with them the whole time, and I love the Titans, baby.
A middle-aged white man sits for an interview. Keith Norfleet, Titans fan.
Steve McNair, he was my role model as a kid. I adored this guy. I wanted to be just like this guy. I would fight my friends if they said something bad about that man. That was Air McNair. Better shut up. Like, that dude, he was Terminator. He played through every injury. Dude was the best Titans quarterback of all time. I don't care what nobody says. Ain't nobody gonna match that guy.
A headline reads, an air about him. After setting NCAA records at Alcorn State, McNair, one of NFL's young guns at QB. Brad.
They kept labeling Steve the toughest man in the NFL. And there's a big old boy coming downhill.
He's a big boy, man. You call a quarterback draw? you would freaking hunt up DBs and maul them.
Archival videos of Steve McNair playing flash. Defenders attempt to block and tackle him. Steve pushes forward each time. 8-0.
To get through the regular season undefeated at home.
The first year in a brand new stadium.
That was an amazing run.
I look at what I can do for my teammates and how can I improve the next guy to be the best that he can be.
And McNair, Steve McNair, an incredible 5-touchdown pass performance. And with the win, the Titans have clinched a playoff game. For Sam Wyche, Kevin Owens, along with the Nationals.
Keith Norfleet.
I was a diehard Titan fan. My girlfriend at the time, we were going to games left and right. We were watching games every Sunday. Titans would come in to her job at Dave & Buster's quite frequently. It was like a hot spot for athletes. They would holler at the waitresses all the time. We broke up, but we were in a lease with both of our names on it. So we were broken up, but still living together. Jenny, she came in one night and she said, you know, Steve McNair came into her job. You know, I asked her if she got an autograph because she knew he was my favorite player. She had Steve McNair in her phone and he was texting her. How am I supposed to sit down and watch football and eat some wings? You know what I mean? I can't do nothing like that anymore. I can't go to Titans games. You know what I mean? Like, my ex-girlfriend, who I'm still in love with, was now gonna be with my favorite football player of all time.
In archival footage, Keith sits in the interview room. Person of interest 3.
You and her kind of sort of seemed like trying to get back together and talking, right?
Well, okay. it was really wishy-washy because...
Okay, but even if it was wishy-washy, you say y'all were trying to get back together, and I'm just going by what you're saying. Quite naturally, if we're trying to get back together, it means like she's trying to play both sides.
You
of
talk
the
about it. We had an argument.
Did y'all talk about that?
No, basically.
And keep in mind, and I'm gonna tell you something, that we've already reviewed text messages between you and her and everything. So, like I said, don't lie. Just tell the truth. Okay?
Yeah. And, well, I definitely texted her. You know, there was a form of jealousy there. Once I started seeing, okay, she's gonna really go start living a single life in front of my face. You know, I would get upset.
Well, explain something to me. Explain to me your MySpace page.
Like the headline on my MySpace, never let anything or anyone come in between you and the one that you love. Uh-huh. Because when you do, you lose everything. I put that on there before she even moved out. That was months ago. I still had feelings for Jenny, and I felt like that I had let somebody come in between us or whatever, you know? So that's why I left that. That was months ago.
If I was to ask you on the polygraph, if I was to ask you when you were at the apartment that night.
No. There's not a possibility. I had no knowledge of the apartment.
Amy Viteri.
Jilted ex-boyfriend, hates Steve McNair. She had even been asking him for financial help as well, it seems, in the days before the deaths, because he was talking about taking out a line of credit to help her. So this appeared to be a guy who seemed to still have pretty deep feelings for Kazemi.
I mean, I always felt like that she was the love of my life because I had never loved anyone like that before. And regardless if you lose them or not, it doesn't matter. You know, even if she was never mine again, I still consider her to be the love of my life. You know what I mean? Because it's like I never loved anyone or felt like that for anyone before.
The timeline scrolls back to the year 2000.
Tennessee comes into the playoffs on a tremendous roll. 13 wins, the most ever for a wild card team.
If we could just get to the first playoff game, there'll be no stopping us. That was Buffalo. How are we gonna win this game?
In archival footage, the game clock reads 16 seconds.
Have some water. Because this is gonna freaking blow you away.
A Bills player kicks the ball.
We didn't play good. I told them they weren't gonna play good. You gotta play better than not good.
Taken by Neal.
He gives it to Wycheck. Wycheck.
Wycheck throws a lateral pass to Dyson, who catches it at the far side 30-yard line. Dyson sprints toward the end zone.
Endure Buffalo in the Music City Miracle. Kidding me?
That was sweet now. That was the dangest thing I ever saw. But you know what? You know what that is? That's just you guys never giving up. That's just you guys. When there's time, huh? Oh, that's right, Joe. That's what it is. We said if we could get this one, just get this one, then all kinds of fun's ahead. And that's what's ahead now.
We got through it. We went to Indy. Handled that one good. And then we went to Jacksonville.
The Titans looking for the lead. McNair keeps it. Touchdown.
He beat him.
It's like things were almost out of our control. It was almost like you say fate.
Tennessee is going to the Super Bowl.
In archival footage, a fan runs to a ticket booth.
I don't even care.
We're going all the way. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
Brad.
We weren't supposed to win it. You know, I don't even know we're supposed to be in it.
The Titans are in the Super Bowl. And Boomer, first let's talk about the Rams.
You know, between Kurt Warner and Isaac Bruce and Marshall Faulk.
That's the greatest show on turf, man.
We didn't have that. Steve and Eddie were our guys. And half of America didn't know who they were.
The Titans quarterback from Alcorn State, number 9, Steve McNair.
How they say you gotta just keep it in focus and it's like another game. That's the way that we approached it. And maybe that's really the reason why we got behind, you know, in the first half of that game against the Rams. We were just kind of like, wow, this is different. As much as we're not trying to make it different, it is different.
Halftime, Rams 9, Titans 0.
We had to adjust.
I was pissed at halftime. I got mad at the offense because we tried to become something that we weren't.
Go win the game! Go, let's go, boys!
Don't throw the ball ever down. That's not us. So anyway, we started settling in. It was Steve just shucking defensive linemen.
Flat out getting after him.
2 minutes and 5 seconds remaining.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield, adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. And Isaac Bruce threads his way for a touchdown.
Kurt Warner hitting Isaac Bruce to hit that touchdown. That was a very sinking feeling in that. But I think Steve's confidence in our ability and the momentum that we had put together up to that point, you know, it allowed us to kind of move the football down the field.
1 minute, 46 seconds.
Here's McNair.
Steve was just freaking good. Tough. Made the right decisions. Steve took it over, man.
22 seconds. Six seconds.
I got amazing, maximum freaking effort out of everybody.
So it all comes down to this.
6 seconds to play in Super Bowl 34. First and goal to go. Rams 23, Titans 16.
Probably the final play of the game.
Steve receives the snap. He passes it to Dyson as he runs a route toward the end zone. A Rams player tackles Dyson. On the ground, Dyson reaches the football towards the goal line.
He came up 1 yard short.
Time runs out. That's it.
We won.
Steve clutches his head. Confetti pours down over the field. Brad.
I had taken my helmet off, and I was just really processing the whole moment, you know, of like, man, we lost this game.
Steve McNair has nothing to be ashamed of. He gave it all. The further you go in the playoffs, the deeper the cuts, the deeper the wounds, the greater the hurt, and that's exactly the way Steve McNair...
When the game ended, Steve was down, he was on a knee, and then we had a very brief exchange. When Swan asked me what I said.
McNair was down on the field. You kneeled down to him. What did you say to him?
You know, that's between the coach and the player, Lynn. You guys can only imagine what I said to him.
He told him I loved him. It'll be okay. And he said, I love you too, bro. That's it.
Jeff rubs his beard and looks down. He nods repeatedly with his chin resting in his hand. Crime scene photos appear. An evidence marker lies next to a shell casing on a beige carpet. Blood stains the carpet red. Amy Viteri.
There were these vague reports coming out about what appeared to be a very tragic young life for this woman.
Pictures of Jenny appear.
When she was growing up in Iran, her mother had been murdered. She came as a very young woman to Florida.
As I started to talk to her family, from what they had told me, while she was in school, they started having all kinds of problems with her. Behavioral issues. She started dating Norfleet. And for the first time, she stabilized.
She then moves to Nashville with him. And then at some point, she sort of moves on from him and she's hanging out with Steve McNair. Police released a lot of text messages between Kazemi and McNair in the days leading up to their deaths. The text messages sort of paint a picture of a woman who was asking him for several things.
Jenny, baby, I might have a breakdown. Steve, everything gonna be okay.
For help financially.
Jenny, baby, I need to pay the cell phone bills in the hospital. Can you transfer $2,000 to my account?
Help emotionally.
Jenny, baby, what's wrong with me? I can hardly breathe.
I know Jenny, and she's never been stressed out like that before. Mm-hmm. She was stressed out, but at the same time, it felt like there was something else.
In archival footage, Keith speaks to Detective Robinson.
We checked Steve's phone records. There were all these different women that he was involved in relationships with.
Robert.
Steve had a itch that he just had to scratch.
Voice of Leah Ignagni, girlfriend of Steve.
I want to know how you found out about me, because I like to keep myself secret.
How long you and Steve have been talking?
Since like Cinco de Mayo. But not like I'm trying to marry this man, okay? I'm 25, I'm independent, I'm realistic, okay? I know what it is. It is what it is.
She told me that she found used condoms in the bathroom of his condo.
I think everything went downhill after Jenny started to realize there was other women that Steve was also seeing, and then she wasn't the only one.
She questioned him about it, and he denied and everything else. I don't know who this girl was. After that, I think he really broke her heart.
Several people we spoke with said that Jenny had expressed some anger over what was going on.
The girl got a DUI some earlier this week. Y'all can check it out.
Archival police dash cam footage plays. 2 days before Steve's murder.
I had found out a few days before Steve was shot He was stopped in a vehicle with a female. She was driving the vehicle. And Steve called and got somebody to come pick him up. And that female ended up being Shahil Kazemi.
That night that she got that DUI, the one thing that happened that I don't think she was ready for, the fact that she probably made Steve upset.
Hey. Are you gonna come in? I'm gonna go to hell.
After that night, Steve did not answer her phone calls until that Friday. She wasn't used to that. Because before now, every time she called Steve, I mean, he would pick up. Steve had to get out of that car and they put him on camera and all that type of stuff. Knowing Steve, he had a premonition. He's like, oh, what am I doing?
In archival footage of a press conference, a white woman hands out papers. A white man in a suit compresses his lips.
We're ready. All right. Autopsies were performed today on Steve McNair and Shahil Kazemi. While it is clear that Steve McNair's death is a homicide as the result of being shot four times, I would expect that it will be a number of days before the classification is placed on Ms. Kazemi's death.
Who owned the gun?
ATF is working on tracing the weapon. We want to learn the initial purchaser and try to identify the trail of ownership, if there is a trail of ownership. All that is taking place.
The timeline scrolls back from the year 2009 to the year 2000. A headline reads, "Oh, so close. Cliffhanger ends great game, great season." Brad.
What's the movie with Tom Hanks where he's stuck on an island?
Wilson!
Castaway. Do you remember when Helen Hunt was explaining the changes that went on in Memphis? And the first thing she said was, Nashville got a team, and they're called the Titans, and they almost won the Super Bowl.
When he died, it was so exciting. They almost won by 1 yard.
That was almost like the persona of people as they told the story. It wasn't like, man, the Titans lost the Super Bowl. It was like, no, the Titans almost won the Super Bowl.
Steve rides a car through a parade.
How do you feel, Steve?
That's great. I feel good. It's a great situation to be in at this moment. All these fans out here to support, they showed up through. Yes, great.
Man, they just love you.
I love them too.
We love being who we were, you know, because we weren't America's team. We weren't in some major television market. It took that game for people to know who Steve McNair actually really was and start giving him the credit for the quarterback that he had become. He was the star that people want to see.
And he gets the co-MVP. And for our franchise, it was important, especially who he shared it with. Peyton. He did his part. We didn't do, you know, the rest of our part.
After that, Super Bowl, two more AFC Championship games. But it's hard to get back. We disbanded the team.
Our relationship changed because he was somebody else's quarterback, you know. But it's still the same because we were good. So when he finally stepped away, in my mind, okay, now he's ready for that transition.
Walking away from the game and, you know, you, in your mind, you feel like you can play, you still can compete. But when you're fighting that battle, you know, from your mind to your body, that those two is not on the same accord, it's not gonna work in the National Football League.
Years later, I left.
I have no regrets. I have nothing but very, very fond memories through the move, through the naming rights, the stadium, the success we had in 99, and all the way through the players, the coaches I've been associated with. And I need some time. I need a break.
Clouds hang over the Nashville skyline. crime scene photos flash. A bloody handgun rests on a blue surface. Text etched into the metal reads, Jennings 9, Brico Arms. Detective Robinson.
As we went into the investigation into the gun that was used to kill Steve McNair, we traced it back to a pawn shop where it was purchased.
A sign reads, Music City Pawn.
Could you tell me what basically happened to the vessel?
I sold it to my partner and his girl.
Okay. Who did you sell it to?
A guy named Adrian.
Adrian, you have a last name for him?
Gilliam.
Person of interest for Adrian Gilliam.
We went to Mr. Gilliam's address in Laverne, Tennessee. He was living with his girlfriend, and the first interview took place in front of her.
Today's date is July the 5th of 2009. It's about to interview Adrian Gilliam. The reason I'm here to see you, Mr. Gilliam,
yes, sir,
is in reference to a gun.
So I had it up until a couple of days ago.
What happened to it a couple of days ago?
I sold it.
Who did you sell it to?
I sold it to some young lady.
What was her name?
I don't even know her name, sir.
Yeah, this is a picture of Shahir Kazemi. Does that look like the young lady that you sold the gun to?
That's exactly the lady I saw the
copy. Police in Nashville say Steve McNair's 20-year-old girlfriend bought the handgun that was used in his shooting death Saturday. Officials say Sahel Kazemi, a waitress who met McNair 6 months ago, bought the gun Thursday night.
Kazemi bought the weapon the evening of last Thursday, July 2nd, only hours after being arrested for DUI sometime around 1:30 a.m.
Were you here Friday when she
was? I was.
Can you tell me about that particular day when she was working?
She seemed sort of down, and I said, is everything all right? And she said, well, you know, her life, I'll just quote her. She said, my life has just turned to shit. She just ended.
The scene fades to black. In archival footage, multiple news cameras point at a police officer.
Based upon the appearance of the crime scene, the police department has concluded that Steve McNair was murdered by Sahel Kazemi, and that in turn, Sahel Kazemi killed herself with a single gunshot wound to her head. While we may never know exactly what drove Ms. Kazemi to make that decision on that Saturday morning, the totality of the evidence clearly points to a murder-suicide.
On a basketball court during the day, people hold candles. Many of them wear Titans gear.
Questions about how former NFL quarterback Steve McNair died have now been put to rest.
Police in Nashville confirm ex-NFL quarterback Steve McNair was murdered by his girlfriend, who then shot and killed herself.
Detective Robinson.
All I'm trying to do is bring a resolution to a family that's suffering from losing their loved one.
It's just a shock, man.
Well, I always love you, man, from the bottom of our hearts. R.I.P. Steve McNair.
Robert Gatti.
You never know who's going to be here today, who's going to be here tomorrow. You never know. So I'm going to leave it at that, brother.
He blinks repeatedly. Outside a football stadium, leaves rustle in the wind. A young black man in a well-tailored suit sits in an empty room with brick walls. Vincent Hill, private investigator.
I think once people start to see the gaps and the holes and the things that don't make sense in this case, anybody with common sense is gonna say, wait a minute, guys. Like, you screwed up. Nashville police, they made a lot of mistakes. Their first mistake was believing Adrian Gilliam.
Adrian Gilliam did not respond to interview requests.
Convicted felon of murder and armed robbery, supposedly a hip-hop producer, supposedly a club promoter. First time they talked to Gilliam, it was the day after they found Stephen Jenny. They talked to him for 7 minutes with his fiance sitting right next to him. Told police, I sold the gun to a girl I didn't even know her name. Okay, thanks for talking to us. It wasn't until the ATF told them, oh, he's a convicted felon of murder and armed robbery. Hey, man, we need to talk to you again.
The original story you told us when we first met with you, that wasn't true at all. My
fiance was sitting right there, mm-hmm. And I didn't want to, you know, go and I wanted to tell you, honestly, but I didn't want, she was sitting right there, so I had to say something, you know what I'm saying?
You know how you actually work a murder case? You bring them down to the interrogation room, turn that light on, and you say, we got evidence tying you to two dead bodies. Start talking.
Have you ever been to that condominium on Lee Avenue?
No.
This here took place. You've never been to that condominium?
No, my life, no.
Okay, so somebody, because I'm looking at some text messages as well.
We got your phone records, and you're all over the phone records.
Cell phone records reveal Cosme and Adrian Gilliam Jr., a 33-year-old convicted felon, exchanged a total of 203 phone calls and text messages in the 3 weeks leading up to the deaths.
He was actually in Jenny's phone as Mr. Ben had stacks, like he's got stacks of cash.
We used to text frequently all the time. I mean, she was flirting with me all the time.
Gilliam was one of the last people to speak with Cosme alive, a three-minute call he made on July 4th at 12:02 a.m.
She just asked me where I was. I asked her where she was, and she said she was downtown. And I told her I was headed to a friend of mine's house.
Hour and a half later, she's dead, Steve's dead, and it's a gun that's tied to him. And then he says, well, I was over at my friend's house.
I'm going to tell you how I know I was at. Because I had just left my friend's house.
Mm-hmm. What was your friend's name?
Tony Smith.
Adrian Gilliam lied about where he was at the time of the murders.
Adrian's a good friend of mine, but yeah. I ain't finna lie for nobody, okay?
Okay.
That didn't help.
Lied about how many times he had been in contact with Jenny.
Did he say anything about what his relationship with this girl was?
I think that was kind of dated.
His alibi shot. He's the last person to call her. It's his gun. It's not rocket science. I'll go one even further. Steve and Big Daddy Gaddy, Robert Gaddy, had a falling out. Gaddy had stolen money from Steve, $13,000. Steve's not gonna notice this is missing. Steve's not gonna notice this is missing. But eventually Steve did notice things were missing and things weren't right. And a few weeks later, Steve's dead.
Robert Gaddy.
He think that I'm involved with my best friend's murder? Over $13,000? Maybe we wouldn't have been fussing and fighting, I mean, over dumb stuff. And maybe I would have been there.
Robert leans forward and hangs his head. He pinches the bridge of his nose.
And I've had to listen to ridicule and conspiracy theories when deep down, I'm feeling this way.
He wipes his eye with the palm of his hand.
That only if I had a knot, had an argument, I would have been there for him.
He works his mouth.
I'm sorry, y'all.
Kazemi's family told us they were 100% convinced that she didn't kill McNair or herself. Apparently, this man convinced them. His name is Vincent Hill.
All of a sudden, I start seeing him on CNN, Fox News, all this stuff. He's written a couple of books about it. Ask him for his resume. Show him how many murders did you work on the police department? Zero. And you weren't even doing investigative work when you left the police department. His first investigation was, guess what? This Steve McNair.
I wouldn't talk about things like this right here for a long time because I had respect for his sons, his mom, the entire family. They need to be respected more than what people respect them because their hearts have been torn out. What Vincent Hill did and is doing is totally disgusting.
I can make a case that things don't add up. I can make a case that, well, boy, and that could be a possibility as well. I don't know. I don't want to speculate. You know, just let it go. Let it go.
In archival footage of a Titans parade, Steve waves at fans. Brad.
Not losing sight of who Steve was as a man, to me, is the most important thing. Not as someone who lost his life to a mistress. That's not what Steve's legacy is for me. And that's always going to be seemingly, you know, because his life did come to such a tragic end, that seems to be the thing we're gonna focus on. but I want people to remember those moments when they ran into Steve, how he made them feel once they left that moment. Because that was him.
In archival footage, a black man standing in stadium bleachers holds up a jersey printed with the number 9.
Before every football game, there's a Titans head coach.
In the stadium, several black men move a coffin.
Right before we went out for introductions, we'd pull the team up and we would circle up, hold hands. Steve's locker was right there. So I always kneeled down and grabbed Steve's hand, bring everybody up for prayer. We said, Lord's Prayer. There's a moment of silence after, and that's it. I was asked to eulogize him.
In the stadium, Jeff stands behind a lectern.
And then we said the Lord's Prayer with Steve one last time. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Give us this day our daily bread. Deliver us from evil. For thine is kingdom and power and glory forever. That ended that ceremony.
The sun sets over a cemetery.
And I felt like that brought some closure for people. Because we got to feel 9's hand together one last time.
Audio description provided by International Digital Center. Written by Kyle Rocco East. Voice by Thomas Reed. Opening credits. A Propagating Stardust Frames production. Executive producers. Ben Silverman. Howard T. Owens. Isabel San Vargas. Chapman Way. McLean Way. Ryan Duffy. Credits roll. Directed by Rodney Lucas. Taylor Alexander Ward. Executive producer Ian Orifas. Produced by Jake Grom Felsen. Carolyn Craddock. Music by Barack Away. Ali Helmwine. Cinematography by Cassim Norris. Edited by Taylor Alexander Ward. Chris Dallas Feeney. Credits continue. Copyright 2024, Netflix. Logos appear. Propagate. Stardust Frames Productions.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.